Stamper's 14. Herodotus. And this is the law. When a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days, and every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. And whosoever toucheth one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. And for an unclean person that shall take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin and running water shall be put thereto in a vessel. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water and sprinkle it upon the tent and upon all the vessels and upon the persons that were there and upon him that touched a bone or one slain or one dead or a grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. And on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at even.
Starting in verse 14 through 19.
Anyway, we studied last time we met about how the rarity of the animal and how the animal was burned and which direction it was burned and cutting its throat and all that good stuff, right? Well, this time we're going to study about how the waters are applied. Okay? First thing you have to do is find a clean person. Now, this makes it a little bit difficult.
It seems like all these people are real busy. Keeping up with all this stuff.
Well, you haven't even, I mean, there's 144,000 priests in the temple. There was not one chair, there was not one place to sit down in the temple.
It is.
The work never stopped.
There's an awful lot there.
So when it says, and Christ sat down, and that you are seated,
it's a big deal.
It's a huge, huge deal.
Yeah.
Christ sat down at the right hand of the Father, and you are seated with him in the heavenlies. It tells, I mean, you can preach for 5 or 6 years just on that.
The only seat was the mercy seat.
That's right.
During this time here, Numbers, were they eating manna and stuff at this time?
They were still in the world, in the wilderness.
They didn't have time to grow nothing.
The book of Numbers is about the trek in the wilderness. All right. How do we find a clean person? All right. That's what we. Next was to find one to whom no possibility of defilement could be charged. Now you got to understand that this is a society in which you had Pharisees, Sadducees, you had Essenes, you had Zealots, and all of them were vying all the time. And so everybody was watching everybody to make sure that nobody did nothing wrong, that they could catch them within the law. That's why the highest of the high were the ones that did all of the really important decisions were the Sanhedrin, and they had to be able to translate in 70 languages. I mean, it's hard for us to even. I can't think like that. That couldn't be. Our minds automatically say that couldn't be right. Nobody could do that. That shows you how far we've fallen. But anyway, so everything was done really for the sake of. I mean, partly it was done so they could follow the law, and the ones that saw the parable and the mystery knew what was happening. But most of the, and you got to see this is kind of an elegant form. Most of
what kind of form?
Elegant. Most of the watching was so that the Pharisees were watching the Sadducees, or the Sadducees were watching the Pharisees, to make sure that everything they did was exactly right. So the main part of this. This defilement issue, if the Sadducees happened to be in charge of the temple during this period, which they were at the time of Christ, then the Pharisees were watching him to make sure that, in this case, no charge of defilement could be laid to the one that was doing the cleansing, because otherwise it would render everything they did unclean, and that would cause a whole big, and then the other party could take over there. I mean, so you understand? No,
it's all they have men's advantage.
It's kind of like the Democrats and Republicans.
It's kind of like right now.
Watching them.
The
Okay? But it's an elegant thing because everybody, both of them, said that the Word was the Word. And so because of that elegance of that one anchor, then when you read the Talmud, you see these incredible arguments between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but all of them agree that the Word was the anchor. And so we really see the fullness of all possible explanations for every scripture. Okay, no, so the idea, they needed to find someone for which the charge of being defiled could not possibly be laid to them. So therefore, no priest could be used, because a priest, he by definition, if he was a priest or a Levite, he had to be in service to others, and that meant he had to have touched the dead body. He had to have become defiled in the order of the service. Understand that? Couldn't be a priest. So what the solution they came up with at the time of Christ, and they had different ones at different times, but at the time of Christ, children were exclusively used. Now, but it wasn't just children. It was these children that, remember I said that the courtyards in Jerusalem were built over bedrock, and then beneath them was the hollow under the bedrock, which served as protection against something dead in the depths. Well, here, a number of these hollows in the bedrock were furnished as dwellings. And it was called the House of Stones. And pregnant women were brought here so that their children destined before they were born for service in the Red Heifer ministry. And they were raised without the possibility of defilement from the dead. They were reared, educated, and kept until they were fit for their service. So that, can you imagine a poor little kid? He's born in a cave. He's not allowed to mess with any other kids, can't play outside, can't do anything. He's living in this dark, obviously there's light from stuff, but fundamentally he's living in a cave. And it was the highest honor.
Well, when we were in the Lutheran churches, that they had those kind of boys that did the altar top service. And
yeah, but they weren't these kind of boys. Those were altar boys. Those are just a Catholic. That's just a Babylonian
version of it.
It's a Babylonian. Let's name it that. It's a Babylonian perversion, a Babylonian remnant. Do you know what the Lutheran Church just carried over the Catholic Church, which carried over the Babylonian? Do you know what happened? Look, everybody knows this probably. I'm just telling everybody something that everybody knows. But in AD 325, Constantine became a believer in Christ, and he was the Roman Empire. And in one fell swoop, one boom, he said, everybody, the whole Roman Empire is Christian, everybody's not Christians to be punished. Well, they had a college of cardinals that came from Babylon that were the guardians of the keys. And they were the guardians of the keys to the mysteries of Babylon. And they all had they wore scarlet as the symbolism of their office. And
they had
little hats and they had little dresses. And so when
they wore keys.
Well, that's what the word cardinal means. That's what it means, keeper of the key. Anyway, so when the Catholic Church, they didn't want to get killed. So they said, okay, we're now the keeper of the keys to this other god stuff. And they kept their political office, and it was continued. So that perversion lasted, and it was used to be much worse than it is now, but then that lasted until the Reformation, and then the Lutherans took all those little dresses, and the Episcopals took all those little dresses and little robes and stuff that are part of the Babylonian mystery religions, and they just, and that's how this crap starts.
They're sort of cool.
Huh?
They're sort of cool.
What's cool?
The dresses.
Long dresses.
The hats.
I think it's
really cool.
I kind of like the swaying, smoking.
No, I think it would be neat.
All of that is just pure religious horseshit.
Yeah. I think it'd be neat to like wear it to the supermarket, and people would get out of your way and say good afternoon to you and stuff. And
that
was an author book for 5 years.
You go to a restaurant, you get a good table.
I'm sorry, I brought it.
They're hot.
That explains a lot about you, man.
Yeah,
I had to learn a whole mass of Latin.
But like, if you go out for dinner back east and there's a priest in your party, you get a really good table.
See, that, oh, it's just horseshit. It has nothing to do with truth.
And he wears a collar, so you know.
Right, you get a really good table.
You know, where all of that's just horseshit. But can you see how all those idiot customs started?
Absolutely.
And that's why I hated, that's why I couldn't buy into the church stuff when I became a believer. And sitting in pews and having this guy up there and that you look up to and listen.
The organ wing.
Do you kneel to
There was a cool thing on PBS that I wanted to know about.
Can you see by the study that we've done, none of that stuff has any basis in Scripture?
I was going to say so.
Go ahead.
The big church place at Chart, is it? Crystal?
What?
The cathedral is. It's pronounced Chart.
Charlotte.
Are you giving Harry a hard time, Ollie?
I'm going to go ahead and say this, whether he wants to hear it or not. There's a big cathedral in France. I think it's at Chartres. And it's the first to use the flying buttresses and all that stuff. And because of that, they were able to use stained glass. And it was a whole new era in religion. And it was called religion as theater. And they used the stained glass to get the right lighting and the right acoustics and stuff. And the whole thing was to make it feel like a worshipful experience. Yeah. It's a heck of a show.
Make it interesting.
No
he's
pun intended.
Naughty. That's being educated. Carry on.
But I like the mask.
He's turning red. Echoes and smoke. Guys with smoke and water and stuff.
I know you like that shit.
Cool.
That's, well.
Smoke. What a show, man. Theatrical.
I've gotten to sing in a lot of those cathedrals over there, and it is unbelievable.
We went to the, what's the one in Milan that, famous one with the 15 different. Huh?
Of the woman?
Yeah. But the acoustics, I mean, you hear whisper.
Yeah.
And same with Notre Dame.
Yeah. And they break the wafers. Yeah.
It's cool.
Santa Maria Novella was the best one of all.
It's pleasing to the flesh.
Can you see that none of that stuff, it has absolutely nothing to do with God?
Yeah, it's good theater.
Has
to do with man.
I mean, do you really know that? I bet you there's a part of every single one of you that thinks that they might be right.
Dress guys are right?
Not really.
Oh my God.
I'm convinced that they're wrong.
No.
I can even feel that they're wrong.
They're not.
My God, I can feel it. I know they're wrong.
Back to the, okay, the kid now is raised in this cave.
Does the mother get to stay in the cave?
Mother has to stay in the cave too. Not get to, she
for
has
how long?
To.
But it's a great
she honor. Until she is, the service is probably, they're in the neighborhood of 5 to 7 years old. So they have to stay and live in this cave 5 to 7 years.
Mm. He can never be unplanned.
How many of them are there down there together?
Well, we've got to remember there's first of all the thing there that's impossible to answer in the first place, but from the reading of the Talmud, it would seem like they didn't allow the kids to be together. I mean, there would be one dwelling place for one, and then across the stone would be another dwelling place for another.
How did the mothers get chosen to have the kids? How did they choose those guys?
It was the it was a huge honor. So
but they bought their way in. It was one way.
No, it was normally the children of the priests. Okay.
And the priests had to have one wife, or could they have many?
No, they just had to have one. All right. Again, but not that last part is just speculation. I mean, I haven't studied that part about it. I don't know for sure that they were children of the priest. I just from everything I read, that's probably what it was. All right, the water for the red heifer had to be brought from the pool of Siloam to the temple for the purification rites. Now, do y'all remember where the pool of Siloam was? It was right down there next to the valley of Hinnom. I mean, it was right next to hell. It was real close to hell. Huh?
What gate?
It was out of the east gate. All right.
Close to the line.
This was constantly necessary. You understand? Because there was water was sprinkling everything and everybody for a thousand reasons of defilement. I mean, so this was a huge, huge deal. Constantly going out, constantly necessary. That's why, and the other part of it is that, let's assume for a second that these idiots found the Ark of the Covenant, and they couldn't use it because they couldn't purify it. There's no red heifer, and the ashes of the red heifer are gone. And there's no way that they could justify not doing that under their law.
They start looking for heifer.
So all of this stuff, I got to know that there's a bunch of Jews that are making a fortune. Because what they're doing...
selling maps to the Ark.
They're raising... No. They're raising money to rebuild the temple.
Yeah, selling water to J.C. Joyce.
And we just use them to live it off the earth.
Send us money.
We're not going to spend any of the money until it comes time.
You know what? I mean, just let's just for the sake of discussion. And what if it were possible that those idiots were right, and that's what God was doing, and He was building all that stuff over in Israel and doing all that stuff. Do you know? By their definition, then we are guilty of blasphemy.
Oh, without question.
Huh?
Without question.
Saint Paul.
Okay.
We're guilty of everybody else's definition of blasphemy.
All right. Okay, now.
Say you little shit to the kid.
What?
Just by saying shit in Bible study.
Paul did.
It doesn't matter. We're just saying by the definition of everybody, we're blasphemous.
Okay, they brought oxen on whose back were placed. Remember, the kid is in. You gotta see this. The kid is in this dwelling that's carved out of the rocks. He's been there for his entire life. He only knows rocks. That's all he knows. Huh?
He's got a pet rock.
Go play with the rocks.
Yeah. He's a good geologist.
Go play with the rocks.
He's
got a pet rock.
Okay. And so finally the big day comes.
He gets sunburned.
It's his raison d'etre. It's his reason for existence. And the oxen comes because he can't walk any place. He has to be protected by this distance. So the oxen come, and they're yoked together, two oxen, and then there's a board over the back of the oxen so that where he rides, it's always at least a hand, at least a cubit from away from the possibility of being defiled. A cubit of open space. Do you understand that?
So there's the oxen, and then there's a board.
It's two oxen.
It slips and
falls.
Oh, I see.
Off. Okay.
It's two oxen.
7 years down the drain.
Huh?
He slips and falls.
Oh, off. It's over.
7 years down the drain.
It's over.
He missed the Olympic medal.
I mean, it's over. The kid steps in the ground.
Oh,
it's over.
Because you got some Sadducee or somebody saying that.
The kid touches the oxen, it's over.
He's too close.
Imagine the shame.
Huh?
Imagine the shame there.
Yeah. But can you imagine this? I mean, can you feel what the importance of this? They had to find this, they had to devise this system upon which no one could lay the charge that there was possibly, that it was any way defiled. All right, let's go on. They brought the oxen on whose backs were placed doors, and the child rolled upon the doors with stone cups in their hands, or his hands. He mounted the oxen on the boards, and when they reached the pool of Siloam, they were let down on boards, and each child let down his stone cups into the pool filled them without leaving the board, and mounted the oxen and returned to the Temple Mount, keeping the water from spilling and keeping the water from being defiled. I mean, it's a huge, huge deal. Now, beneath the Temple Mount and its courts was that this place, you know, that's where they lived, that they were safe from being defiled. They then moved to the beautiful gate. It was between the rampart and the court of women, where the vessels with the ashes of the red heifer were kept. And that interface between the court of women and the entrance into the court of Israel is where this ceremony took place. And a male sheep was brought out, and a rope was tied between his horns, with one end of it tied to a small stick or a twig. And you gotta picture this. This is weird. The stick was dropped into this vessel. Yeah, it's probably this. It's a huge vessel. I mean, where the ashes are. And then the sheep was startled, so as to be driven backwards, and the ashes on the stick then came up and into the water.
There's just no way. There's just no, you know. I'm trying to. I mean, it's just like nobody can even write this stuff.
I know. All right.
It makes me feel like what I'm trying to do, doing all that same trouble to get it right.
That's right. Well, I'm just.
That's what it's all about.
This is the point. Okay.
Their whole lives. And everybody arguing about what was right.
Now, Rabbi Jose, remember him?
Jose!
Yeah. The only Mexican rabbi.
No.
He's from Bolivia.
It's not Jose, it's Jose. But we just pronounce it Jose.
Jose Verde.
Remember what's unique about Rabbi Jose?
Yeah. He was from Galilee.
And what's unique about that?
Because nothing good can come out of Galilee. It's Galilee of the nation.
He was the only rabbi of note that has ever come out of Galilee.
They're alerted. They're both kids.
Okay.
But he was
from Arkansas.
Big deal.
And he was a big-time Pharisee. Rabbi Joseph said, "Do not give the heretics," the Sadducees is what he meant by heretics, "an opportunity to mock at such care and precaution of having this child go through all this. But a child himself took it and sanctified it." A purification itself then was made by the child taking a hold of these three stalks of hyssop, dipping it in this water that now had the ashes in it, and there had to be enough ashes in to see it. They dipped it in the water. There were three separate stalks, and each had to have a blossom on it. Well, that's another weird thing. But they were tied together. The hyssop was grasped while dipped into the waters with the ashes in it. It had to be running water. And then they were sprinkled at least three times on anything and everyone that was unclean. Now, the question is, I said all that to say this in all that great detail. If we're right that now the body is,
thank God.
Wait a minute. The body is the red heifer and the burning and the pyramid, and we have to be burned, and that somehow the rivers of living water that come forth from us, from the belly, from the rivers of living water, who then is the one that applies? Who can be the one that applies it? It can't be a priest. Certainly can't be a kid. It's crawled all over the friggin' floor.
Spirit.
Well, that's too subjective. There has to be experimentally.
Christ.
How does that manifest? Do you just say, "Oh, Christ just applied the water"?
The least spiritual.
How can this be applied? How can we find this clean person to administer?
Has to be
and how does this work? I mean,
Where's your dirt?
How does it work? Well, we got to first find out for sure that we need it. Let's go on. Now, those who lived in the country would come up to Jerusalem for purification. They had to come up 10 days before the great feast, at least 10 days. That's why Christ, remember, he told the disciples 40 days after to go and tarry in Jerusalem. Well, the reason they were told to go to Jerusalem is because they had to go to the 50 days was when Pentecost was, so they would go on the 40th day so that they could go through the rites of purification because they'd been with a dead body. All right. Any child prepared I don't know if I believe this or not. But anyway, this is what Talmud says. Any child prepared for this was fit for only one session of cleansing. That would mean there had to be a whole lot of kids living in those caves.
Sure would.
But if he got up all the way to the court of the rampart and was just about in, and like a bug landed on him, then he was unclean.
Oh, see, I just have to throw all the time
with
this.
It really is.
It's just so overwhelming. Then you got to do this, and then you can't do that, and then
the reason for this is this. Okay, the reason for the knowing this is as follows. Is so that you will stop trying to get it right.
Absolutely.
Because something like this was necessary if you want to live by your own rightness. Anybody understand that?
It has to be that extreme.
Huh?
It has to be that extreme.
Now,
I did this like every day for hundreds of years.
Thousands.
Wow. So we could see.
Yeah, everything happened so that we could see. And what most, and think of how many of the modern Christians don't even know these things exist. That's really so sad, and that's why we can't take this stuff lightly. In terms of the red heifers, it's said that Moses prepared the first, Ezra prepared the second, then there were five others between Ezra and the destruction by the Romans, and then that was the last one. All the container for the ashes of the red heifer was destroyed when the temple was destroyed in AD 70.
Did they like have a premonition or something on how to do all this? How did they all kind of say, well, let's do this and we'll make it?
No. What we see here is the Torah, the first five books that have all this stuff in it, is also, they say, is the companion, the oral Torah, or the Talmud. The Talmud has two parts. It's the Halakha and the Haggadah. The Halakha is the oral law that was given by God to Moses. But that goes into the explanations of all this. That's why you study the Talmud. And the Haggadah is the stories about it. And that's what the Talmud is.
That's why he was up there for 40 days.
That's why it took me so many years to dig this stuff out. I mean, I studied this for 12 years.
Yeah, it talks about stuff in here that you're supposed to already know. It's like, well, it says in the book of so-and-so.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, are we still trying to get to who in the body we of us?
No, I just wanted you to think about it. Yeah. I'm not answering the question.
We need to know that we need it first.
Well,
I don't care what you think right now.
Right. Fact, well, I thought you were asking us to answer the question.
No, I wasn't asking you.
He's asking to think about it.
I asked you to think about it. I don't really care what anybody thinks. That's why I'm such an asshole.
Think about what you're going to say now.
Such an essay? Is that what
asshole.
You're saying? Asshole. Such
an asshole.
Is that a sect?
Like a Sadducee.
The Sadducees, the Pharisees, the Essenes. Assholes. They lived in the Lakewood section of Jersey.
Okay. Now we can go back to the sacrifice of the cow itself. If it was performed without the priest having washed his feet, if it was performed without the priest wearing his white garment, if it was done outside this pit that they dug, you know, for the fire, or if it was dug in two pits, or if two cows were burned, or if the blood was not sprinkled exactly seven times, more is okay, at least seven times, more is okay, exactly towards the Holy of Holies, or if hyssop was not added to the fire, or if cedar was not added to the fire, or if scarlet was not added to the fire, then the sacrifice is invalid.
Boy, can you imagine? Been looking for 74 years for a red heifer, finally find one and then screw up.
Well, if that's where the fear of God, I mean, you're saying all the time how they had an understanding of the fear of God. Well, it's obvious why. And they had to do so much perfectly the first time.
Maybe they could redeem time too, though.
Not likely, my dear.
I don't think so. I don't think there was any grace, was it? There was no grace.
The grace was...
You screwed up, you're on fire.
The grace for the priesthood, there wasn't very much grace for the priesthood. The grace for the people was that if they accepted these offerings, then they were considered by God blameless.
But the priest had to get it right.
Yeah. But then they had... There was offerings. There were things that could be offered so they too could be considered. I mean, there was always grace in the same way that it is for us.
Almost, right?
No, always. It was always grace.
But there was a time when you were cast out. And we read that the last time.
Well.
When you're separated from the people.
No, but that wasn't cast out. That was unclean. That you were unclean unless you refused to accept what God had.
Right.
But would the people, even then, if they would have been able to see through all this stuff, the ones that could see through it,
They saw Christ. And they saw Christ. That's what it says. The gospel was preached all the way back to Abraham.
So those would be the really only people that would have grace.
But whoever saw the sacrifice would have grace. Whoever accepted the sacrifice. Now, if
did
it
anybody,
was...
Excuse me, but did anybody back then, any of the rabbis or anybody say things like, now this is a way to see what Messiah will be like?
Mm-hmm.
They did do that.
Oh, there's 164 references to Messiah.
So really, is it really then true that the only difference is that they did not believe that Messiah had come?
The only difference. In fact, the only difference between modern Jews and modern Christians is that both of them, there's no difference. Both of them believe that Messiah is coming again.
But I mean, like the learned guys would know that the sacrifices were a picture of Messiah.
Sure.
That the end of the law was Messiah.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, now if the sacrifice was burned without the right kind of wood, or if other wood, or even only with straw or stubble was burned, then the sacrifice was valid. In other words, There was this list of things that we just went through that made it invalid, but then there's a whole bunch of stuff that it doesn't matter. So if you burned with the wrong kind of wood, and in fact, if you only had straw and hay to burn the damn cow up, it was still valid. All right? But, okay, now, if a cow is cut during the process, I mean, like, other than in its neck, or even if it was slain with the intention of eating it. Or, now listen to this, if the cow is cut, or even if it was killed with the intention of eating it, or even if you went so far as that your intention was to drink its blood, it is still valid. Because no unlawful intention, however wrong the act intended, causes the invalidity of the cow. That means that we can't what the mystery of that is that you and I can't defile sacrifice.
We can't invalidate the
one. We can't invalidate.
Yeah, so you come in with an evil intent, desires to destroy the body.
Doesn't matter.
Can't do anything.
Not only that, nothing. And once the process has been started, nothing in the universe can stop it. In other words, it didn't matter whether they were attacked. It didn't matter whether nothing could stop the fulfillment of the sacrifice, a fulfillment of this, the killing of the cow and the preparation of the ashes.
And was that time determined by the age of the great heifer?
No.
What determined that time?
When they understood it, when the priest said go.
So the heifer didn't have to be a baby or
a... Well, it had to be of a particular age, which we'll get into later, but...
So Judas going off and doing his thing with Christ, same thing. Didn't screw it up.
Nor can once...
He's begun a good work, he's faithful to finish it.
Once we begin to understand the red heifer, and again, you got to hear this, the wisdom of the universe, Solomon said, remember what, did we talk about that in here? Solomon understood all the mysteries of the universe, all of the parables, except he could not, didn't know what the meaning of the ashes of the red heifer.
So he didn't know nothing.
No, I wouldn't say that. He had, how many concubines did he have?
A good many.
Okay, the only thing that can cause the sacrifice to be unclean and invalid. Listen. The only thing that can cause the sacrifice to be unclean and invalid is if the one preparing it or ones preparing it are engaged in any work during the time of the preparation of the red cow.
Rest. No, they're out of rest.
Work is defined as what?
Anything other than the rest.
Moonlight.
Paul, since we're like, exploring all the details.
Well, why don't you define it for us?
Work meaning doing anything else besides preparing for that?
Work meaning anything, doing anything else other than being at rest.
Any definition of work has as a component effort expended.
Well, I mean, if they're like moving stuff around and getting stuff, like there's no seats in the temple, one would look at that and say, that's resting? I don't think so.
If it's done with effort, it's work.
Huh?
If it's done with effort, it's work.
If it's done with
joy, if it's not done with effort, it's not work. It's service.
And you don't take that physical.
That's why it says that you, whatsoever you do in thought, in word, in deed, do heartily, as unto the Lord, as your holy service.
Yeah, I'm still working on that.
Like as busy as the day of Passover.
Service has to be work.
Remember how busy the day of Passover is? Getting the tables and decorating and all that stuff. Is that work?
No.
It's pretty busy day.
Okay,
all during the time the heifer is in that little pyramid, wood may be added. In fact, it's encouraged to be added to increase the heat of the fire.
Throw something else.
The service must be done during the day. It can't be done at night. Where any work causes the water to be invalid until the ashes are put into it. The mixture of living water and the ashes may be prepared in any kind of vessel, even one made of dung or of stone or of earth, except any vessel that's connected or fixed to the earth cannot be a suitable vessel. In other words, each one of us are a vessel for the ashes of the red heifer. As long as you're not connected to the earth, as long as you have no certain dwelling place. Now, I'm not going to talk about who administers it, but I want to give you a hint. No, I'm not. That's enough for tonight.
Vessels of dung.
You know, when Mary talks about the Passover, how we're busy all day, and it doesn't feel like work.
If it's work, you're in trouble.
I wish I could do that at work.
Well, then it's what's the way you do it is you see it today. That's the preparation for Passover.
It is Passover. Every day.
No matter where you're at.
The only thing you're doing, you're either going to a wedding or to the announcement of the wedding at Passover, or you're going to a funeral.
Wherever your foot touches.
Everything seems just so dead. Everything just seems dead.
But you can enliven it, because wherever the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
You put your foot someplace, it comes alive.
Wherever your foot touches is holy ground. Okay, I don't feel like talking anymore. Everybody got their per memo?
Yeah.
And other than that, take it big guy.